Today is Tuesday, April 14th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Amid the pandemic, a deadly storm rolls through the southern U.S. The head of our agency addresses unfounded attacks on Voice of America's coverage of the pandemic.
We are 100% government funded. We are not government controlled.
Also ahead, rapper Pitbull is using his music to lift up fans in the lockdown. It's all on today's International Edition. A top health official in the U.S. said Monday that the coronavirus outbreak could reach its peak here this week, pointing to signs of stabilization across the country. The U.S. recorded more than 22,000 COVID-19-related deaths, the highest of any other country. President Donald Trump asserted Monday that he is the ultimate decision maker for how and when to relax the nation's social distancing guidelines, as governors from both political parties pushed back, saying the U.S. Constitution gives states the authority to regulate public safety under their jurisdictions. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, whose state topped 10,000 deaths Monday, said Trump is welcome to tell states when to reopen as long as he has an actual plan.
You want to make those decisions? Tell me you want to make those decisions and then make them in a way that states can follow. Or say, option B, federal government does this, states, you do this.
Meanwhile, Democratic leaders in the Northeast and along the West Coast announced separate state compacts to coordinate their efforts to scale back stay-at-home orders or reopen businesses on their own timetables, even as Trump tried to say it's his call. As officials around the world start to consider how and when to reopen their countries, they worry loosening restrictions could easily reverse progress. Still, there are signs countries are looking in that direction. Spain permitted some workers to return to their jobs, and a hard-hit region of Italy loosened its lockdown restrictions. But the opposite is happening in France. President Emmanuel Macron addressed the nation Monday and extended its strict lockdown. He also spoke of the need to assist African nations. Joining us to talk more about all of this is Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, what did President Macron say?
President Macron said that the end is not yet in sight. The threat of the coronavirus is still there. And he announced there'll be a further 4 weeks of lockdown. And that's a very strict lockdown here in France. So that will continue now until the 11th of May. And even beyond that, he said that the lifting of this lockdown will be very progressive, that not everything will open up again come the 11th of May. Restaurants, cafes, museums, they will not open. It will be some time, probably in July, before they will be able to open. Some schools will open. Universities will not open, he said. But he said they needed that time within the government to get in place all the safeguards they need. That means more testing, more masks for the population, and also to get the healthcare system really in a secure manner. That means allowing for health workers to have a bit of a holiday, for allowing sort of all the pieces of the French healthcare system to be put back into place, so as if there is the so-called second wave of cases, that France will be ready for this. He did apologize to the nation that mistakes had been made. Initially, there weren't enough masks, but he said that the government took responsibility for it and was now going to make sure that it got everything back on track. He said, indeed, borders will remain closed. So that still means that France is still closed off. Other than from its European neighbors, it's closed off to the rest of the world. He said, yes, this is a reminder of how vulnerable we all are, but there will be joyous days ahead.
Right. And we've seen that cases are continuing to rise in France. So obviously he's looking at it like this is no time to stop what we're doing. But he also has some concerns for Africa. What did he say about that?
Indeed. He made this incredible statement. He made reference to EU, European solidarity, and the need to support African countries. And in particular, he raised the possibility of either cancelling or cancelling some of their debts. He, of course, said that France did need to help Africa. And when we think about it, France was one of the first G7 nations to step up and suggest financial support. So this was a very important point, but it really did flesh out something that the French foreign minister had alluded to in Parliament here in Paris last Thursday, where he announced that France will reallocate some 1.2 billion euros of African development aid to the fight against coronavirus. And that is part, I think, of President Macron's effort to focus international attention on not just the health and...
That's Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Meanwhile, the UK will remain in lockdown as coronavirus deaths have risen now above 11,000. Saudi Arabia has extended a nationwide coronavirus curfew indefinitely after cases of infection increased in recent days. The country of about 30 million has recorded more than 50 deaths and over 4,400 infections, including some members of the Saudi royal family. Observers say the numbers are the highest among the six Gulf Arab states. Last week, the Saudi-led coalition fighting in neighboring Yemen announced a unilateral ceasefire there. Shortly afterwards, Yemen confirmed its first coronavirus case. Dale Gavlak reports for VOA from Amman.
The Saudi capital Riyadh and other big cities have been placed under a 24-hour curfew to try to stem the spread of the virus. The Saudi health minister has warned there could be 10,000 to 200,000 COVID-19 cases in the kingdom in the coming weeks. Royals have also fallen victim. Prince Faisal bin Bandar bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, the governor of Riyadh, aged in his 70s, is in intensive care for coronavirus, the New York Times reported, citing doctors and hospital communications. King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, known as MBS, have gone into isolation to avoid the outbreak. Joseph Bahout, a Carnegie Middle East Program Fellow, tells VOA that de facto ruler MBS may see fallout over the kingdom's coronavirus policy.
The very interesting news about the royal family being now directly contaminated. We are talking about something like 150 brain cells that are already in hospital, and they are preparing some 500 beds to welcome senior members of the family. And this will be, of course, also something that will be put in the liability line of MBS with other things. They have boasted in the beginning that they were dealing with the coronavirus very well, that they were much more equipped than other countries, but now reality is catching up with them.
Health officials in the country believe many of the royal patients became infected abroad. Meanwhile, the Saudi-led coalition backing Yemen's government announced a unilateral two-week ceasefire in Yemen that went into effect on April 9. Yemen is already suffering through a humanitarian crisis. Gulf analyst Cynthia Bianco of the European Council on Foreign Relations tells VOA there are serious concerns for Yemen's population, already experiencing a lack of food, clean water, medical care, and diseases like cholera, let alone coronavirus now.
There are real concerns in terms of the availability of health resources and whether it is possible at all to do social distancing. So I think it will spread quite quickly. And in 3 months from now, we will see a peak level of contagion in Yemen to the point that it will definitely and necessarily impact also political groups, militias, and everyone who is involved in the war.
The Iranian-backed Houthi Shiite rebels call the Saudi ceasefire a ploy to try to boost its international standing. They accuse the coalition of several attacks the same day the ceasefire was announced. The UN warns that should the virus spread, the impact would be catastrophic. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
While children do not represent a large percentage of coronavirus illnesses, the UN says children are emerging as the hidden victims of the pandemic. The United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, says they have found that 99% of the world's children are living with some form of pandemic-related restrictions impacting their well-being. It says virus-related disruptions to children include malnutrition and violence, particularly in vulnerable populations such as refugees and migrants. Joining us to talk about it is Dr. Pia Rebello-Britt, UNICEF Global Chief on Early Childhood Development. Thank you for being with us. Tell us a little bit about what your analysis is finding.
It started with the health pandemic. It's sort of morphing into something so much bigger and much more than we imagined it to be. And so I think that part of it also is sort of taking everyone a little bit by surprise. And as we observe the situation, really, for us as UNICEF, as a global agency where we have programs in about 150 countries, and we also have national committees in about 40 other countries, we are seeing one universal sort of aspect around the world, which is really lives of children have been disrupted completely. And this is regardless of your country income status, regardless of your geography, it is disruption. We see this disruption occurring in urban settlements. We see the same disruption in remote rural villages and refugee camps. It's sort of very broad. Where we are very concerned is first the level of disruption to basic health of young children and families. And we've been doing so much work on life-saving work for young children where, you know, we've really turned the corner on infant and young child mortality. But what we are seeing is that is sort of in jeopardy because a lot of the immunization programs, for example, are not able to reach families in the way they should. So we see from basic health to education, as we know, hundreds of millions of children are out of school right now. We also see tremendous impacts just on basic protection, where children are now more exposed to violence. So, you know, all the areas where children have their basic rights of health, of learning, of development, of protection are all sort of compromised with this pandemic. And within that entire space, we are particularly concerned about the very young children. And initially, because this virus didn't have a clinical impact on very young children or a minimal impact, it was thought that they're not at risk. But as the epidemic grows, actually the secondary impacts for young children are very strong. And at this stage, we really want to raise the visibility on the issue of young children and families. And we are concerned as borders close down and parents lose their jobs, that these young children may become the hidden victims of this pandemic.
Now, when you say the hidden victims, are you referring to the fact that they're not getting what they need or they could be in danger of being abused?
Both, actually both. So one, they're not getting what they need. I mean, the thing is that, Laurie, the reason we have all these intervention services is because we know what is needed for young children in impoverished and vulnerable situations to be able to compensate for their life conditions, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that. And now those services are disrupted. They're not there. So that's the first thing. They're not getting that. And then the second point is the one you're raising of their specific vulnerability and maybe heightened violence and abuse that might be taking place at this time, A, because of the high stress conditions within homes, and then being in that space where they have no alternative, they have no way of being out, they are in lockdown situations. And then we also see around the world where it's going on with sort of detention, migration. So there are a range of situations where their rights are compromised.
Is there any particular part of the world or region that is drawing the most concern for you, or is this more on a general level with younger children?
So it's very interesting. I think in some ways you asked that question because I think the geographies of this virus are very much growing. So this is an interesting pandemic. It started in the global north. And the way this virus is traveling right now, I think what we are concerned about is as it travels to other regions of the world, in South Asia or in parts of Africa, maybe the containment strategies that have been used, for example, in North America or Western Europe may not be possible in those communities. So we are concerned that as it moves to some of these other geographies, that we have the right containment strategies in place, because the basic fabric of life for many of these communities is the social distance model may not work. I mean, they don't have safety nets. Their daily work requires them to get out of the house to feed their family, even to get water. And so we are concerned about the vulnerability. We are concerned about those that live in close proximity, in refugee camps where there isn't running water. So there are these very particular areas that we are concerned about in terms of what we can do to prevent the spread and transmission.
Dr. Pia Rebello-Britt, UNICEF Global Chief on Early childhood development. Cameroon has required the wearing of face masks by all of its citizens and has begun large-scale production of chloroquine to treat COVID-19. The country says its hospitals are already overwhelmed with more than 850 confirmed cases within 6 weeks, yet it does expect confirmed cases to rise into the several thousands. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Almost everyone on the streets of Yaounde began wearing masks Monday. Police were out to enforce the measure taken by the government to limit the spread of COVID-19. 22-year-old Christian Yubin, speaking via a messaging app, says the police forced him to buy and wear a mask.
Temperatures are very high, up to 35 degrees, and they're asking us to wear masks, which suffocates us. And I think the best thing to do is to respect social distance, stay far from people.
Dr. George Alain Etunimbala, Director of Pandemics and Epidemics at Cameroon's Public Health Ministry, says they are insisting on preventive measures because hospitals are already being overwhelmed by the number of COVID-infected persons.
On va libérer des listes, c'est-à-dire faire sortir des malades dans les hôpitaux qui n'ont pas besoin de traitement.
He says, with the ever-growing number of infected persons, the government has asked people who are feeling better in hospitals, including COVID-19 patients, to return to their homes, where they will have medical follow-up by hospital staff. He says the government is also transforming football stadiums and gymnasiums into facilities where COVID-19 infected persons will be received for treatment. Madeleine Twente, Cameroon's Minister of Scientific Research and Innovation, says besides the obligatory wearing of masks, the government has ordered the production of the drug chloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients. She says they have started producing 6,000 tablets per day and expect to drastically increase production when they get some more ingredients from China. She says President Paul Biya has ordered them to produce at least 8 million tablets of chloroquine each day as the situation is getting worse. She says Cameroon has the know-how and laboratories to produce the chloroquine, but what they lack are the necessary active pharmaceutical ingredients they can import from China and India, and that China has assured Cameroon that the ingredients will be shipped in 2 weeks. Chloroquine is one of the oldest and best-known anti-malarial drugs. It has also attracted attention over the past few decades as a potential antiviral agent. Last week, Cameroon announced that it had seized counterfeit chloroquine from at least 300 pharmacies and hospitals and closed two fake pharmaceutical companies as thousands of its citizens were rushing for the drug with unproven belief that it can stop COVID-19 infections. Emmanuel Anyangwen Gasa, a Cameroon-born medical doctor practicing in Germany, says U.S. President Donald Trump is leading many African countries to believe there is a cure for COVID-19 when scientists have not yet announced any. He spoke via a messaging app from Bonn.
What is the essence of that drug? Chloroquine has not been proven to treat COVID-19 successfully. It was unfortunate that Donald Trump took this thing up, spoke about it, and publicized it.
The rush for chloroquine as a treatment to COVID-19 began in Cameroon in March after France announced that half of 14 patients who underwent chloroquine therapy got better, and when U.S. President Donald Trump referred to it as a potential cure for the ravaging coronavirus disease. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
Here are some of the other top stories we are following. A member of the crew of the coronavirus-infected USS Theodore Roosevelt died Monday of complications related to the virus. The death came 11 days after the aircraft carrier's captain was fired for pressing his concerns that the Navy had done too little to safeguard his crew. The sailor was the first active duty military member to die of COVID-19. On top of the pandemic, the U.S. Southeast is dealing with more misery after a dangerous storm plowed through, killing more than 30 people on Monday. The storm brought tornadoes, flooding, and mudslides and left more than a million homes and businesses without power. South Korea reported Monday that at least 116 people initially cleared of the new coronavirus had tested positive again, even as officials suggested they would soon look at easing strict recommendations aimed at preventing new outbreaks. South Korea reported only 25 new cases overall Monday, but the rise in reactivated patients has raised alarm. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. At his daily coronavirus briefing Monday, President Donald Trump complained that he's been treated unfairly by the media. The comments were in response to a scathing New York Times article on his administration's response to the pandemic.
So the story in the New York Times is a total fake. It's a fake newspaper, and they write fake stories.
Meanwhile, there are also attacks against congressionally funded Voice of America directed against VOA's coverage of the pandemic and China. An official White House publication Friday accused it of using taxpayer money to, quote, speak for authoritarian regimes. It also cited a report from earlier in the week on China easing its lockdown in Wuhan, saying, quote, VOA too often speaks for America's adversaries and not its citizens. VOA Asia's Ira Melman talked about it with Voice of America chief Amanda Bennett.
Amanda, what was your first reaction when you saw that?
Well, I mean, the first thing when you see a criticism is to try and decide whether or not, or check to see whether or not the criticism is valid. So we took a look at the things that were being referred to. And frankly, we were a little puzzled because one of the items that was referred to was an Associated Press story. And the Associated Press, as you know, is a professional news organization that people subscribe to and is used by us as well as many, many news organizations around the world. It was just a simple item about the reopening of Wuhan. And the second one was a set of facts that were drawn from the Johns Hopkins database, which is also the standard thing that everyone is using. So they were both pretty standard, very non-controversial items. So we were a little bit surprised.
Where do you think this came from? Why do you think this came from?
I have absolutely no idea. If people have queries or questions or complaints about our content, we are extremely responsive. So if people reach out to us, we're happy to engage. And if we've made some error, we're happy to correct it. In this case, it came out of the blue.
You know, obviously, I have a point of view here, and it is in support of you because I happen to be part of this. We are reporting every day to all of Asia, English speakers to all of Asia. Our numbers have been going up. People want to hear what is going on. But what do you say to people who are believing what we're doing? And why are we not doing what we were charged with doing?
I think we are doing what we're charged with doing. Now, we're by law required to represent all American people and not just a segment of American people, and to provide objective, truthful news and information according to the highest standards of professional journalism. And so we do our extreme very best to make sure that on all issues, we're looking at it as neutral as possible and giving all the aspects of it a chance to be seen and heard. And that sometimes includes things that people want to hear, and sometimes includes things that people don't want to hear. But that's how we get our credibility, is that we try very, very hard to show all sides of an issue.
How do you deal with situations like this? Obviously, you, both of us, work for the U.S. federal government.
Well, we are federal employees, but Voice of America is unique in the sense that we are legally separated from interference by any government official. It's one of the things that gives us our power. It's actually the independence is really the existential question for Voice of America, because even though we are 100% government funded, we are not government controlled. And that's what the difference is between us and other government-controlled state media. And it's also one of the reasons we have credibility, is because people know that we are not expressing a single point of view. We're expressing a multiplicity of points of views.
What I'm thinking of is what we are doing, and I know what the rest of VOA is doing, trying to inform our audience, which are people around the world, what is happening with the coronavirus pandemic. Doesn't that stand up against what we have been charged with doing?
I think I'd like to look at it in a bigger context, which is that, yes, of course, that's what we're doing. And as a matter of fact, you can tell by the way our audiences are growing in all the 47 languages in which we broadcast. Our audiences are huge, and people from all over the world are really coming to us, because you can see that in a crisis like this, they really want to know what's what. And they're coming, people are coming to us from countries, for example, where the country's press is required to produce only the official version of what's going on. And everybody sees that in those countries, that's not the whole version. So people are coming to us looking to see what experts from all around the spectrum are telling them. And that's one of our great strengths, is we broadcast all around the world, and we're trusted to show all sides of an issue.
It was very interesting that the VOA has been charged with taking the China side of the stories, but at the same time, China is kicking journalists out of China.
Yes, in common with the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and Time Magazine, we've been effectively barred from most of our news gathering operation in China. And we'd very much like to report from China. So that, I think, shows that there is some maybe fear of what we're reporting to the rest of the world and frankly, to the people of China themselves.
Is this the first such pressure you have faced since you've been in the job?
You know, this job is full of pressures from all kinds of sides. I mean, remember that we are not broadcasting into the United States, and English is one of the languages we broadcast in, but only to countries outside of the United States. So when you talk about this kind of pressure, we receive pressure from all kinds of countries. It comes from Iran, pressure comes from China, pressure comes from Russia. There's nothing new about pressure in this job. When you tell the entire truth or try to tell the entire truth from all sides, you're going to get pressure from around the world.
Anything you care to add here that we haven't covered?
You know, I'm really, really proud of working at VOA. I'm proud of the work that our journalists are doing. It's a very difficult work.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with the head of VOA, Amanda Bennett. You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
You know what spreads faster than any virus? It's fear.
Rapper Pitbull is hoping to help fans find strength in these isolating and worrisome times with a new dance song. After being forced to cancel his concerts, Armando Christian Perez, known as Pitbull, says he was looking for a way to help the world. That's when he came up with "I Believe That We Can Win." He says he came up with the idea after hearing a chant played at college basketball games.
It's not how you fall, it's how you get back up. And what don't kill us make us stronger, boy. Bet that off, take a swing at us. You better hit hard, cause when we swing back, it's back, oh God. It's time to knuckle up, buckle up, and fight hard. Now let's all buckle up, buckle up.
You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Mungagne, I'm Lori London in Washington. Please take care and be well. I believe that we will win.
From the bottom, I'm that uncut, real raw. When things get tough, that's when we show up. That's when we show up. This is VOA News via remote.